Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Kehan. Today we'll discuss the article by Augenreich et al. Titled, Vascular Dysfunction and Oxidative Stress Caused by Acute Formaldehyde Exposure in Female Adults. This article was published October 16, 2020, as part of our special call for papers on environmental inhalants and cardiovascular disease. Joining me today are guest editor Matthew Gore, lead author Stephen Ratchford, and expert Tiago Bruder. Let's get started.
Well, thank you, Kara, and thank you both Steve and Tiago for joining me today to discuss this paper. In this study done at Appalachian State University and Elon University, Dr. Steve Ratchford and his colleagues examined the short-term vascular consequences of formaldehyde exposure in healthy female adults. And they did this utilizing a natural exposure setting. That is, the subjects in the study were being exposed to formaldehyde as part of their normal coursework at the university, here namely a cadaver dissection lab. The students in the study had only encountered formaldehyde briefly once before, so this was the first dose, so to speak, of formaldehyde. And right after their exposure, ultrasound was utilized to assess vascular function. The authors found significantly decreased flow-mediated dilation in the brachial artery, which is a measure of macrovascular function, but found no changes in microvascular function measured by reactive hyperemia of the brachial artery, which is another ultrasound measure, or passive limb movement of the femoral artery in the leg. And to get at how these changes were taking place or the mechanism behind them, Steve and his colleagues looked at markers of oxidative stress in the serum of these students and found an increase in MDA, but no changes in xanthine oxidase, protein carbonyl, or C-reactive protein. This study is significant because it shows, utilizing human subjects, that only one short-term exposure to formaldehyde can begin to have deleterious effects on vascular health. So with such changes after only a single exposure, this begs the question, this is for Steve, where and how often are we encountering or exposed to formaldehyde?
Yeah, thanks, Matt. First of all, I'd just like to thank you for the opportunity to talk about our research here. So I think what a lot of people don't realize is that formaldehyde is a common preservative actually used in many household and industry settings, from new home constructions and carpeting and even throughout cosmetic, lumber, and medical industries. So people are routinely exposed to formaldehyde, whether they realize it or not. We were particularly interested in the topic due to formaldehyde being a common occupational hazard that we see in cadaver dissection laboratories during medical training and even in common medical grade disinfectants, which I think is pretty currently relevant topic, actually.
Yeah, great. And I commend you looking at the paper. You were able to get college students to not consume caffeine or alcohol for 24 hours prior to the study. So I commend you for that. But could you comment on how these exposures were completed and what you may expect if these students were exposed over a longer term?
Sure. So we used a natural experimental design here by recruiting subjects from cadaver dissection courses who were naive to cadaver dissection laboratories and the formaldehyde that's actually used in these cadavers to preserve those donors' bodies so that they can continue to be used for months and all these students are able to learn from their anatomy. We tested the subject's vascular function immediately before their initial class when they were exposed to formaldehyde. We performed the flow-mediated dilation test, like you talked about, to examine the conduit vessel function and the reactive hyperemia test to examine microvascular function in the upper extremity while using Doppler ultrasound to measure brachial artery diameter and blood flow. After this test, we performed the passive limb movement in the lower extremity in which we have a research team member move the knee joint through 90-degree range of motion to stimulate microvascular vasodilation while we measured femoral artery blood flow using the Doppler ultrasound. Once these preliminary tests were completed, the subjects were outfitted with a chest-mounted formaldehyde sensor to measure individual formaldehyde exposures. And then the subjects went to begin their cadaver dissection course in which they were exposed to 37% formaldehyde solution for 90 minutes. And again, that formaldehyde solution, while these cadavers are kind of bathed in that solution, once you actually get in there and start dissecting, you really start to kind of kick up these fumes. And that's kind of how their initial exposure is taken in through the lungs. immediately after the class, the subjects returned to the lab and laid back down quickly, and we began to reassess their vascular function using these same techniques. And certainly I could speculate that there may be a concentration and duration effect with these exposures. I think even more interesting than this would be to examine individuals who are routinely exposed to formaldehyde on a daily basis, such as the instructors that teach these courses and are exposed potentially multiple times a day, or even occupations like I was talking about before in the medical, cosmetic, and lumber industries. I think this study is just the start of various interventions and investigations that we can do, titrating the formaldehyde dose, the duration, and repeated exposures that these various industries regularly experience.
Yeah, and that's great that you were able to take advantage of this this natural experiment with students from this lab. And it was probably a lot easier to recruit since the course was already ongoing. So I think that's great to have some real human data. These results demonstrated a change in macrovascular function, but as you noted, that there's no changes in microvascular function. And there's a question for Tiago. Wouldn't something that changes the macrovessels also alter the microvessels? Could you comment about maybe the differences that are seen here?
Absolutely. So, but firstly, I'd just like to thank the AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology to discuss a very nice paper, and it's a cool opportunity. As we know, several cardiovascular risks affect microvascular tissues. But I think in particular for this paper, what is very cool, because Steve's group, when they look at the brachial artery flow mediated dilation, they found a difference, like an impairment response. However, as already mentioned, they didn't see any difference for the small vessels dilation where they use the brachial artery reactive hyperemia. But I think when you try to put all those data together, what is very, very nice, because the group, they didn't see difference in the blood pressure. And as we know, like a blood pressure usually affects first the small vessels, or opposed is true too, because when you have impairment in the flow in the small vessels, you consequently increase the blood pressure. So it's very clear that the change happening is not mediated by small vessels. And I think when you look in terms of disease in general, microvessels, usually you see disease such as aneurysm or atherosclerosis. And I think if those zones continue to be exposed to the formaldehyde, probably they will develop atherosclerosis in the future, something that the authors discuss in their paper. This is very, very cool finds, actually.
Yeah, and so to attempt to sort of explain what's going on, you know, the mechanism behind this, they found an increase in MDA, but look for a few other things, xanthine oxidase and protein carbonyl. So why do you think oxidative stress would be suspected here? Is this a common thing in vessel physiology? And how does this influence vessel function?
The authors use the MDA as a marker for oxidative stress. And just to describe a little bit, like MDA is a product from lipid peroxidation, which is a marker for oxidative stress. Basically, if you have a more lipid peroxidation, you have a more MDA formation, and then you can characterize the oxidative stress. Also, we know that oxidative stress is characterized by an imbalance between antioxidant enzymes or oxidant enzymes. If you have more oxidant enzymes, you have a more reactive oxygen species formation. If you have a less antioxidant enzymes activity, you have a more reactive oxygen formation too, which characterizes the oxidative stress. And oxidative stress has been associated with several diseases, not only cardiovascular disease, but also neurological disease, hepatic disease. But when you look at the literature, oxidative stress, or let's talk about the vascular, like a vascular oxidative stress, has been associated with many, many cardiovascular risks. So if you have increased your reactive oxygen species, if you have oxidative stress in the vasculature, you trigger endothelial dysfunction, you trigger vascular proliferation, and all those change will increase the risk for the cardiovascular risk. The authors didn't check any antioxidant treatment before the formaldehyde exposure. But I think that they discussed very nicely the reduction in the flow might be associated with oxidative stress. Since we know that larger vessels, they are more dependent on the nitric oxide. And also we know when you have increased reactive oxygen species, we can decrease the nitric oxide bioavailability, and they lead it to the impairment in the blood flow. I believe that the authors are right, and that probably the reduction in the flow was mediated by oxidative stress.
Yeah, great. So it really sounds like from just a short exposure, there are some mechanisms that could lead to real downstream consequences. And to get to sort of a regulatory level, I know a certain chemical exposures, there are limits that are set, like with NIOSH or OSHA. And in your study, Steve, they found an average exposure was 197 parts per billion. Do you know the recommended limit for formaldehyde? And do these results from your research challenge this limit? Should it be lower?
So I don't know if I can really speculate as far as if this truly challenges those levels or not. I should point out that NIOSH sets the recommended levels for health and safety, while OSHA actually sets the permissible levels for industry feasibility and standards. And so both of our facilities at Appalachian State University and Elon University are routinely tested for formaldehyde levels, which should fall within the OSHA permissible limits of 750 parts per billion for an 8-hour period, or 2,000 parts per billion of formaldehyde for a 15-minute exposure, actually. However, these levels can exceed the NIOSH recommended exposure limit of 16 parts per billion for a 10-hour period, or 100 parts per billion for a 15-minute exposure. So kind of like you were just talking about, our subjects had quite a range of formaldehyde exposure levels from 20 to 350 parts per billion using those chest-mounted formaldehyde sensors that were recording a 30-minute average exposure time. On average, the highest 30-minute exposures were around 250 parts per billion, while the lowest 30-minute average exposure was around 150 parts per billion. So these levels are well within the OSHA permissible exposure limits, although they did exceed the NIOSH recommended levels for health and safety during this 90-minute exposure.
Thank you. So looking at the results of this study, Tiago, should someone who encounters the amount of formaldehyde such as in a course such as this, or as Steve mentioned, an instructor, should they be concerned about their vascular health, especially if it's multiple doses, like maybe the students or instructors in this lab?
Absolutely. So I think as Steve's group described in their discussion, it's very nicely, actually, they said only 3% of they found in terms of change in the blood flow. It seems like to be nothing, 3%, but in the follow-up sentence, they describe that if you have 1% of change in the blood flow, it can increase up 13% of the risk of cardiovascular event. Basically, those women who were exposed to the formaldehyde, they have 40% of increased chance to have some cardiovascular event. But something that caught my attention the very first time that I read the paper was I thought back to Brazil, when my wife used to be in the hairstyle in order to stretch their hair. And I remember a couple times I came to pick her up and I got close to her and that smell hurt me so hard, my nose and my eyes. And something that crossed my mind now, Steve, I just have a question for you. Do you think that the stress condition that we have when you are close to the formaldehyde could be an additional risk for the cardiovascular event, like not only consider the formaldehyde acting directly in the vasculature, but like a stress condition. Could you give some idea about that?
Yeah, I think we all have kind of anecdotal stories of being exposed to maybe the cosmetic industry, or if you've ever been in a cadaver lab before, a lot of people come out feeling kind of like they have a headache or kind of asthmatic kind of symptoms at times. I've had a lot of colleagues over the years that then go and try to exercise and they feel like their exercise routine, their performance just isn't as up to par as what they normally are either. So besides the anecdotal stories though, yeah, I think the next step after this is I think we really got to start looking at those that might be more susceptible populations, the cardiovascular disease individuals already, probably a lot of the instructors that might be a little bit older might have underlying health conditions, hypertension or other cardiovascular diseases that might make them even more susceptible to these potential vascular related decrements.
Well, I'll tell you, as someone who uses formaldehyde in the lab all the time, I'll be being a lot more careful after seeing these results. And well, this has been a great discussion. And I want to thank you again, Steve and Tiago, for joining me. And Steve, I'm looking forward to seeing more work from your group in this important line of research. And back to you, Kara.
Thanks for listening. Would you like to hear more? Visit the AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology homepage for our latest episodes.